Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Hello and welcome to the Market Musings podcast here on Stopbox, where today our guest is Mark Bolton, the Managing Director of Panthera Resources, listed on the London Stock Exchange with the symbol PAT. So, Mark, welcome back to the podcast. It has been about 10 months since we last spoke. It was actually December last year, and how quickly a year has gone. How are you? Welcome back.
Thank you very much for inviting myself and Panthera back. It's good to talk to you, gentlemen. And happy to report what has been a very busy 12 months.
Indeed, yes. There's lots to catch up on, I believe, with the goings-on at the company. And Kenny, welcome, of course, to you.
Yep, good to speak again, Mark. I was just listening to the other Mark saying it was last December, and I'm just looking out my window, and it looks like winter in Scotland here, so nothing changes. We always do is a weather report in Scotland here, and it's just a bit miserable every day now. So, yeah, no, it's great. It's great to have you back on, and I was just sort of flicking through the news releases for the last sort of 6 months, and it's been pretty relentless, I must admit, in the last 6 months, you know, drilling.
There's been quite a few releases out, indeed. And talking about the weather, hopefully there's not too much background noise here. We have a strong weather alert going on around me. It's blowing about 30 knots, and so hopefully we get to the end without a power cut.
Mm. Where is it you're calling from, Mark?
I reside in Perth, Western Australia.
Right. Okay.
As I like to say, it's the world's largest jail. It's about 2,000 kilometres north and east west, and it comes with white sandy beaches and nice coffee.
Oh yeah, the coffee. I've heard the coffee's good. I've never actually made it myself to Australia, but I have heard that the coffee is excellent, yeah. But also I've heard about the prison as well. But apparently it's a nicer prison than other parts of Australia at the moment.
Indeed. In fact, I'm looking forward to hitting the deck in London again. I think probably first quarter next year will be when I'm allowed out.
Yeah, okay. Well, that'll be nice. So I wonder if... shall we start this podcast perhaps by, if you can give us maybe a bit of a high-level overview, just a paragraph or two on Panthera and what you're all about, and just a high level on the mix of projects, and then we can talk in a bit more detail.
Sure. Panthera is listed on the A market in London under the ticker code PAT. It's a gold focused resource company with assets primarily in West Africa and in India as well. We've got about 8 projects all up, held directly and indirectly at various stages of progress. Our goal is to take the company from explorer to developer whilst maximising share prices appreciation or capital appreciation for our shareholders. Mm-hmm. It's a small company, a very focused company with a very lean cost structure. And what we try and do is maximise our activity and opportunity for that shareholder value growth on the back of that low-cost overhead.
Mm-hmm. So very much a gold-focused company, then, you say. Is there any reason for that?
Really, it stems back to the basis of the company's original founding, which is the Bukia project in India, which is a fabulous gold project in Rajasthan. We've reported a resource there historically, and that's been the focus of the company for more than 10 years. back in about 2017, the company started to pick up assets in West Africa. Since I joined the company back in April last year, following a detailed review of those West African projects, I pivoted the company to primarily focus on the West African gold project. So it's been an evolution going back some time.
Okay. Well, let's have a look at some of the projects then. So you've had some significant news, haven't you? Let's start with that one, and that is, of course, the maiden resource at the Lobola project, and that's the project in Burkina Faso. So, yeah, I mean, what can you tell us about this? It's quite a significant resource there you've got.
Yeah, when I joined the company, it was the most advanced project in West Africa. At that time, there'd been no work on any of the West African projects for some 18 months. In fact, there'd been no work on Lobola at all. But it stood out as the most interesting and the one that was clearly on a path to development. At that time, we had a market cap of around, I think it was about £4 million, and we needed a shot on the arm in terms of how we would take that forward, funded, and create some momentum behind that. From the very first review, I believed that there was a potential mine there, and we ran a formal process, we selected Moy Dow as a partner for us. So that process of review kicked off in April, and by July of that year, 2020, we announced a deal with Moy Dow. What was unusual about the project was there'd been two major focuses of exploration historically, some 65,000 meters of drilling had already been carried out by those explorers. Mm-hmm. Moy Dow took a view that data consolidation and not only getting hold of the data, but making sure that it met all the QAQC requirements was priority one. They successfully negotiated the acquisition of all the data. That was completed in late 2020. In order to take the project to the next phase, we needed to validate that drilling through from a QAQC point of view, through a twin hole drill program. That we had hoped that program would start in January, but there were some rig availability challenges, and they really didn't get in there till late March and start drilling. It's a small program, only 4,500 meters, from that they were able to pull together that maiden resource of around 630,000 ounces of indicated and inferred. The grade's looking good. It's 1.6. From a expectations point of view, we were hoping for a number that was in the low. We had a range in terms of what an exploration potential for the whole project based on all the historical drilling. We our own internal estimates guesstimated that a resource would be around the low end of the range initially. And with follow-up drilling, it would move to the high end of that range of between 500,000 and 1.5. So, from a outcomes point of view, the maiden resource was spot on, But we also expected the grade to be about 1.3. So we were pleasantly surprised to see that the actual grade came in much higher, about 20% higher than expectation at 1.6. So it validates our initial assessment that this is a great project and well on its way to being a plus 1 million ounce project.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to ask you there, Mark. What sort of resource target are you guys looking at in the 2022?
The drill program is currently being put together for 2022. It's a very big program. The final numbers are, in terms of the size of that program, still subject to ongoing review and board approvals of Moidau, DFR, Panthera, etc. So take these numbers with a grain of salt. But I'd suggest we're looking at circa 20,000-25,000 meters of RC, 4,000 or 5,000 meters of diamond to do network. And there'll also be some AC or RAB drilling from an exploration point of view. What will the ultimate ounces be? I don't want to speculate too much, but it should be well north of a million ounces, is my personal view. I think based on, without any exploration success, I'm confident it'll reach the upper ends of that target. There is a lot of exploration potential on this ground, and the opportunity to see it, the range grow above that. The prospectivity is definitely there. How much more? Look, it's too early to say, but our estimates to date have really only been based on what we can see, and we're seeing a lot of extensions to the three main structures. We're also seeing some sub-parallel structures that have got no historical drilling but artisanal working. So there's a lot of exploration potential that really is untouched.
Yeah, and obviously the Lobola project is on this Birmingham greenstone belt, and you just need to look at some of your neighbours, and I'm just looking at the scale, probably within like 150 kilometres, there's a 4.5 million ounce deposit, there's a 3.4, another 3.3, another 4, a 2.9 million ounce deposit, so there's plenty of large mines in close proximity.
In the region, absolutely. Look, I don't disagree with this, but as a rule of thumb, for West Africa, you're chasing a million ounces at 1.25. Those are the magic numbers. Anything above that, and typically you've got a mine. I should point out that the resource is based on, the way resources are calculated these days compared to, say, 10 years ago, there's a strong discipline in terms of what can be called a resource. Arguably, it's almost it's in terms of what gets thrown into the resource calcs is effectively it's a mini reserve study, because every ounce has to be economically extractable. Mm-hmm. So I would hope that we'd see a very high resource to reserve conversion ratio based on the numbers we release and release going forward.
Perfect. And of course, the sort of ownership structure of the project has changed recently as well.
Yeah. Look, it is, and I do apologize for the complexity and the moving structure. I can't help my corporate finance background, unfortunately, and sometimes it's a bit hard for everyone to necessarily keep up while I'm running at 100 miles. Essentially, our market cap back then in July last year was only £4 million.
Yeah.
A market cap today is £10 million. We worked out, did an estimate of the costs to take Lobola to a BFS, Bankable Feasibility Study, and we estimated it would be around 15 to 20 million US. That meant a typical bankable feasibility study, and this is just a very rough number across the board, is 20 to 30 million US. Our estimate for what was left at Lobola was 15 to 20. We own approximately 45% of Moidau. So essentially Lobola was spun out into an SPV, a separate vehicle that we own 45% of. It's its own company, it's its own board. I sit on that board. Tony's one of the, Tony's my CEO. He's one of the supporting consultants and to help on Lobola's technical team. The Moidau needs to fund the project itself. So what we've done by spinning it out is we took the burden of the funding from ourselves and created Moidau. This recent draw program and all the work that's been done, which has cost $2-3 million all up to date, it's been fully funded by Moidau. Mm. So had Panthera spent that money itself, our shareholders and all our assets would have been diluted 20 to 30% to date. And that's why we did the Moidau spin out. The downside is yes, we didn't dilute all our other projects, but when we spun out this and Kalaka, it meant that we would dilute our interest in those projects.
Yeah, but I mean, it's effectively a free carry, isn't it?
It is. And we view it as a we class it as it is today, before the DFR transaction is considered. So ignore DFR for a moment. We view it as effectively a farm down.
Yeah,
it's done via corporate structure, but it's effectively it's a farm down at better economic terms than if we had spent the money ourselves at the Panthera shareholder level. The transaction we've just recently announced in August with Diamond Field Resources, or DFR as we call it in short. DFR is a Canadian a company listed on the TSXV, and its majority shareholder is Jean-Raymond Boulle, who was Friedland's partner in the discovery of Voisey Bay. He controls, he's the majority shareholder and controls DFR, and you know, he's a, let's just say he's a gentleman with very deep pockets.
Yeah.
What we've done essentially is the deal we've struck with DFR is that all of the Moidau shareholders except for Panthera will roll up their shares in Moidau into DFR. And effectively, we'll become a joint venture partner with DFR. We've taken it to another level. If we'd just done that, then we would own 45% of Lobola, or Moidau, which owns Lobola, and DFR would be our partner. But we've struck a second deal with DFR, or second component with DFR, and they've agreed to spend $18 million on Lobola, and we'll dilute our interest down to 20%. Which means that we free carried all the way to essentially our estimated BFS cost. Mm-hmm. But we also retain a buyback right or back-in right, where once the study has been done, or effectively, actually, it's technically it's once the $18 million is spent, but it's a proxy for the BFS. So once the BFS is done and we see the results, we can, and all the value has been added, we can choose to back in and go back to 30% by buying our interest back in for 7.2 million. So it's essentially a look back right with someone else spending all the money wearing all the risk.
Yeah, so it's almost like you've got a warrant to buy back in, isn't it? That's what it's like.
It's a warrant, absolutely. It's a back-in right. Back-in right is effectively a warrant. It's not a commitment.
Yeah.
No, so apologies for the complexity of it.
No. I mean, it's quite a simple structure when you break it down. It's extremely interesting. And of course, that's not your only projects in Africa.
That's the issue and why the DFR deal is important to us. It's not our only project. And if you look at the cost of capital, now cost of capital actually in any project development is the number one cost for developing any mine. It's higher than the capital cost of construction. Dilution is the most value destructive aspect of any mine development, and the more you can offload some of that front end expenditure, the better outcome for shareholders on average. But when you have these other projects, the dilution is not only the project you have, like Lebola, it's all your other projects. And we formed a view that not only was the DFR deal good capital discipline in its own right, the bonus is that we don't dilute our other projects. Now, these other projects aren't as advanced, for example, Basala. But what's different about them is that they are a different stage of development, and the capital required at Basala, for example, is a fraction of what's required at Lebola. And the value we can bring to our shareholders, the value add from that spend, is more compelling from a value to our shareholders' point of view. In other words, a small amount of money can add a lot of value in terms of share price growth opportunity.
And one of those projects you mentioned there, Basala, you're currently drilling at the moment. Is that correct?
Yes. I think I probably mentioned it on our last podcast that I had a soft spot for Basala. At the time when we spoke, we hadn't drilled a hole in it yet. But there were some aspects which drew me towards it. And it's been the main focus of our activity outside of Lebola, really since the end of Q3 last year. And we haven't put the tools down until just a few weeks ago, since that time. So for 12 months, we've been working continuously, either on the ground or in the background, on Basala. Essentially, what it was some early stage geochem and some old RAB drilling data that we started with. What was interesting was that it was within 8 odd kilometers from two sizable historical mines, one being privately held and the other owned by Endeavour, the Kalana mine. And these are sizable mines. So off memory, Kalana is just shy of 4 million ounces. Lifetime to date, it's a mine that was discovered back in the 1980s. The Dessua mine, there's not a lot of data out there because it's private, but it's around 2.5 million ounces. And they're just a few kilometres away. Secondly, the historical geochem highlighted a gold structure or a zone of around 8 kilometres. And we kicked off with an expanded geochem program, followed by a ground mad program. We finished that up and announced that. That was done in December, January. We announced those results around February, maybe March. And what it gave us was a confirmation of this regional zone. Unfortunately, it didn't give us enough definition to jump in and start drilling. We jumped in with an IP program. And fortunately, we had an IP crew immediately available, and they hit the ground literally within a week. They wrapped up their program in a very quick, smart, I think it was about 4 weeks. And it gave us excellent definition of the structures. We came away with 22 targets. It was a bit of that data was only became available at the end of May last year. And we literally had 4 to 6 weeks left before the wet season hit us. So we were able to get a drill rig in there. It was a bit, we couldn't promise that the drilling to our shareholders exactly then, because it was just too tight. The wet season could have hit us, and that short notice to get a drill rig, but we were able to get one within 2 weeks on the ground. And we managed to squeeze in about 4 weeks drilling. We had a target of 9,000 meters. With an average hole depth of 32 meters. We managed to squeeze in 9,900 meters, but the average hole depth ended up being much better at about 62 meters. And as a consequence, we only managed to drill 13 of the 22 targets before the wet season hit us. And most of that drilling was to the south, with a little bit of drilling on the northern target. So I guess we drilled about 60% of the north-south targets, starting from the bottom, moving up, and we've got the last 40% to the north to drill. I guess the main thing, despite telling you, giving you a history lesson, is it's been an intensive program of activity to get it to the point where we were able to drill it and drill it with all of the available data. And it was really just an air core program, a geochem program, essentially to sample the top of the basement. What we walked away with was every single target we hit, mineralization. And we scored multiple meters, 10, 20 plus meters of economic grades on some of the targets. And to do that on a geochem program, on your very first program, is just, you know, we're over the moon.
Yeah.
That you start a brand new project and you get those kind of results.
Yeah, and it's pretty shallow as well. Obviously, it was air core drilling, so it wasn't a great depth. But I mean, some of them, I think it's pretty, the 20 meters at 2.1, I think it was almost from surface, wasn't it?
Yeah, so some of the better results is 10 meters at 3.45 grams, including 5 meters at 6.59, 20 meters at 2.12 grams, including 10 meters at 3.79. Those results are from 10 meters. The results have been well above expectations. From an exploration point of view, all you're looking for is PPB, not effectively PPM.
Yeah.
We're looking for a pathfinder mineral, a pathfinder grade, not economic grade. So we're very happy with these results. We've only scratched the surface of what the opportunity at Basala is, and so far the results are very exciting. I'm looking forward to the next round of drilling, which I'll we'll talk about a little later in the podcast as to where to from here.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because where to from here? I mean, when does the shift from explorer to producer occur, Mark?
Well, Libola will definitely lead the pack on that. Mm-hmm. Next year's drill program is to drill it to a BFS level, to effectively, ultimately complete the BFS, and that drilling is to support the BFS. So that's why it is a substantial program. And the target is to deliver more than 1 million ounces. So I don't have a precise date yet for when that BFS is to be done, but I do expect that that drilling to be substantially completed next year. And generally, you can from those resource numbers and those wireframes, you can very quickly determine whether it's economic or not. So even if it's not a BFS by end of next year, it'll certainly be clear whether you've got a mine or not. My crystal ball says highly likely, but it is a science and you have to go through the process. Mm-hmm. Basala is catching up quickly. Our focus of Basala is twofold going forward. Immediate focus. So we're expecting a drill rig to be on the ground in Q4. My best guess right now is the last week of November. We'll drill this after Kalaka. I'd expect Kalaka will be drilled in probably mid, no later than mid-November, if not the second week of November, and Basala will follow straight after. It's a small program at Kalaka. Basala is a much bigger program. It will use the same drill rig as we've just used. It's an exceptionally good rig. It's still an AC rig only, but it's proven to be very effective on this ground by virtue of the current program. We've only drilled 13 of the 22 targets. Targets 10 and 11, we only scratched the surface on what's there. So in other words, some of these targets we've drilled, we've got a lot more drilling planned. Mm-hmm. We've also got obviously the other 9 targets that have been identified. So in rough meters, my best guess is we'll probably drill about 10,000 meters and probably around 60% of that, about half, call it half, will be on the new targets, and about half will be on following up some of these existing targets where we've got really good results. So it'll be that drill program will be completed this year. I would expect us to start to see assay results subject to assay lab availability, which has been very good, I might add, much better than I'd hoped. We managed to get results out at Basala, the first results in about 4 weeks from hitting the ground. Yep, so on decent. That basis, sorry?
Yeah, that's pretty decent, so it is.
Yes, yeah, we were very pleased. I would expect us to start reporting in assays by December.
Yeah, and you just mentioned Kalaka there when you were talking about the drill programs, and obviously that's the next project to undergo some drilling, and that's obviously the other end of the scale from Libola. This is more early stage stuff, although it's had significant work done in the past.
It has. It isn't as of today, it isn't as advanced as Basala. Before we talk about Kalaka, I just want to make a general comment about Basala. If we go back to the comment I made about Libola, where I said, you know, you look for the rule of thumb is 1 million ounces at 1.25 for West Africa. That assumes that a project is developed independently. If you look at what I mean by that is it's developed in isolation. If you go into the goldfields around Kalgoorlie, the mines exist every few kilometres in clusters. So a very small deposit, if it doesn't meet the economic grade for a standalone development, it's readily traded or joint ventured or merged or something as soon as it's 100,000 or 200,000 ounces. If you take that analogy back to West Africa, this project's within under 10 kilometers of two large projects. And therefore, we don't necessarily need the 1 million ounces to make Bisala work economically. It's a case of, yes, we want it to be that, but to the extent it's below that doesn't mean that value can't be extracted from the project with our neighbours. Mm-hmm. Now, that is, I should point out, that is purely a hypothetical, but it's important to understand that as we go forward and see the drill results and understand how the company can or might extract value from the project in the medium term.
Yep, perfect. So just to touch on Kalaka, Mark, before, because I know you want to do an India update before the end of this podcast as well, but just...
Yes, sorry, I do talk a lot.
yeah, just give us a quick overview of Kalaka. Obviously, there's an up-and-coming drill program, but it does look a very interesting program with some decent historical results, drilling results.
Look, you can characterise Kalaka quite quickly. Look, it's a very large mineralised system. Okay, when we for example, just that small area that has been historically drilled by Anglo, just that small area, K1A as we call it, which is literally a pinprick, not even a postage stamp, in terms of that mineralized system. We're estimating a exploration target of circa upwards of half a million ounces. Now, what the work we've done over the last 12 months has done is better understand that mineralized system. Now, our goal in this drill program is not to prove up a resource. Our goal in this drill program is to effectively, in this very large system, is to identify higher grade zones. So whilst we're not drilling a huge number of meters, what we're trying to do is hit a few of these high priority targets to see if the system might hold some high grade tenure. Mm-hmm. So that drill program is 4 weeks away, if it comes back at better grades, given this the magnitude of the gold system, it'll be very interesting.
Mm.
Yeah. Definitely a busy end to the year.
It sounds like an active end to the year.
Yeah, two drill rigs or two drill programs back to back. So, yeah, and obviously we've talked about various layers of the Panthera cake, but obviously there's a potentially a nice cherry in the top. I know you're keen to talk about India.
Yeah, look, the way I describe India to everyone is, our future and value proposition to our shareholders is driven by West Africa. When you invest in our company, make your decisions on the opportunity and value proposition, which is West Africa. That's not to say there isn't enormous value potential in India, but it is speculative. Clearly by far the best project that we have an interest in, the Bukia project, that is. The issue has been a regulatory one in India. Now, it has been a bit of a roller coaster ride for our shareholders over the last 12 months on India. And what I've tried to do is make sure the news flow is factual, not based on rumor, and is based on clear deliverables, not promises. The reason being is to ensure that we don't feed that speculation and volatility in our share price, which sees our long-term shareholders potentially hurt in terms of financially. For that reason, the news flow on India is very skinny. I just want to, highlight, because there is no significant news flow, that doesn't mean the company is not focusing an enormous amount of effort and resources on resolving the challenges in India. Our efforts are probably greater today than they were when the DAO started. The company the company's team remains in place. We have a clear action plan that we're working through, and an action plan that I have faith in. We remain optimistic that our investment ongoing in India, by virtue of our team, will realize a result for our shareholders. The challenge for us is how to communicate that when it's work in progress, there's no objective outcome. I guess that's the message I want to let our shareholders know, and that is, we are committed to India, and it remains a lotto ticket that I intend to win.
Yeah, I like that. That's a nice way to finish the what's going on in India. Yeah. I mean, I have looked at that in the past, and it's definitely a very exciting project. But as you say, it's ice in the cake, or the cherry in the cake potentially. So yeah, it's a game changer in the making.
There's plenty of of other activity going on, isn't there? Of course, as well, to keep investors excited.
Absolutely. I've said this literally back within a month of me starting, when I spoke to all our major shareholders. I said to them exactly what I said just a moment ago, which is, we'll make money out of Africa. Don't worry about India. India will happen when it's ready.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. And I stand behind that.
Perfect.
Okay. Well, I wonder if we can finish, Mark, if I can ask you to perhaps do a sort of a 60-second pitch of Panthera, and maybe you can focus it on the developments over the last year, but really what to come as well. So what activities people can look forward to? Are you up for doing that? I can start a stopwatch, and you can see if you can manage to do it in under a minute. What do you think?
Oh, God, I think I remember we did this last time. We had a competition with Tony.
In fact, yes, we did. That's right. Yeah, we did. But what do you think? Do you want to have a go at it?
Yeah, we'll have a stab.
Go on then. In 3, 2, 1, off you go.
Panthera is a company which has made a lot of promises back last year to deliver value from activity and news flow on its projects in West Africa. As far as I know, every one of those promises have been met. it has delivered that activity, that news flow, and most importantly, it's delivered outstanding results from those levels of activity. That momentum has not stalled, and that success provides us the platform for that activity later this year and into the 2022. Where we saw activity at Basala, we'll see growing activity at Basala later this year. Subject to results, we'll see that continue in the new year. Similarly, at Lebola, we've already seen the results with our maiden resource, and we see a major drill program at Lebola next year, which we hope will deliver a plus 1 million ounce resource through the DFR funding arrangement. So I don't see any slowing down of the value proposition for the company.
Mm-hmm. Okay, excellent. Well, you're 90 seconds there, so that's not too bad. It's not too bad. No, that's okay.
Sorry about that.
I seem to recall it was a little bit longer last time, but no, that's good. You gave us lots to consider there. And let's not leave it nearly a year before we catch up again, because there's certainly, as we discussed, that there's certainly a lot happening towards the end of this year anyway. So maybe a catch up in quarter one next year would be a good idea to see where you're at. But we've had a lot to talk about.
Look, I love your platform. Mm-hmm. I love your platform because it adds the texture and color, which I think investors really need that opportunity to understand the sector properly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, it's a lot more relaxed as well. So as market mm-hmm. allows you to, it's not the standard 20 questions that you're asked in every interview. So it gives you an opportunity to get it across in a longer format.
No, thanks, Kenny. Thanks, Mike. I very much appreciate the opportunity.
No, it's been very good to catch up, Mark. Thank you very much for your time. And yeah, like I say, let's catch up again soon.
Indeed. Thanks, gentlemen.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Tune in next time.